You're listening to Studio 809 Podcasts. This is what community sounds like.
We hiked the Daniels Pass Trail.
Connecting with others and riding bikes.
Electric assist bicycles and tricycles is a thing.
The Colorado Springs Parking and Curb Management Plan Survey.
Up and down.
The Patty Jewett Neighborhood Porch Fest.
Mm-hmm. Porch Fest.
Yeah, so I don't think we're going to be talking about the best sofa in Colorado Springs.
Hopefully not.
All that and more on this episode of Loving the Springs, the podcast where we celebrate the best and elevate the rest.
Hard to believe it, but this is the first official episode of Loving the Springs. I'm Dave Gardner. Sitting at the table with me are
Al Brody. And we have with us today Jackie Muir. And she is young and she is engaged in our community. And she will show you and tell you some of the things that keeps her going here in the Springs.
Hello, nice to meet you guys again, Jackie Mueller. Super excited to be here because I love the Springs.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. First thing, we've got to know, why did they name that state park after you?
Oh, I don't know, actually, but if anyone didn't know, Mueller State Park is my park.
Oh, I guess you can say that.
Own it.
Just kidding. It's really cool, though, a unique little feature.
Jackie, I've known you through the therapeutic recreation program that is part of our Colorado Springs Parks Department, and you are a young, shining, excited, energized intern at the time, but now you've had a lot of time to get to know the Springs, and you've chosen to stay in the Springs instead of returning to Kansas. So what are you excited about? What keeps you here, and what keeps you motivated to do the things you do?
Staying out of Kansas.
Right? Well, as an intern, what we like to call it is you're a sponge. So when I was 23, I was soaking up all of the things when Al knew me, and I was so young. But being here over a decade now, I would say what keeps me moving and what probably keeps everybody else moving is spending time outdoors and probably connecting with others. So I think we're fortunate here in Colorado Springs to all have one thing in common, and it's that we love Colorado Springs and we get the opportunity to live in somewhere so beautiful. So I think that alone allows me to just continue to explore places that, you know, I haven't been able to.
Yeah, so I don't think we're going to be talking about the best sofa in Colorado Springs.
Hopefully not. But
no
places to sit. You've spent a lot of time on a bicycle seat and putting other people into bicycle seats. So tell us a little bit about your experience with bicycles and how you got excited and the things that you do as far as riding here.
Yeah, so fun fact, actually, it's been 12 years now since I've owned a TV. So if you guys ask me about current events or any show that is going on right now, I won't be able to talk about it.
Okay, so how did you like Leave It to Beaver and Flipper?
Yeah, no movies. But I would say, like, I was able to get a bike in 2014 when I moved here, and that was about a year and a half after working for the city of Colorado Springs. And I think once I was able to fall in love with biking, it was easy to connect with other people that also love to bike. And so right now I'm fortunate to work at Angle Tech Cycle Different, which is a recumbent cycling shop here in Colorado Springs. It is one of the most unique shops, I think, in the U.S. Maybe I'm biased, but if you go there, you might also think that. And so I would say, you know, connecting with others and riding bikes is now one of my favorite things to do here in Colorado Springs. And I think helping other people find that similar love is also something super exciting and fun to do. So introducing people to cycling, whether that be adaptive cycling or just two-wheel upright cycling, I think you experience the same benefits when you're out there on the trail.
You have a significant other, and I was wondering if you two cycle together.
We do cycle together. We haven't rode a tandem cycle together yet.
That might be why.
It's on our list, actually. We have a really cool and unique cycle tandem at Anglitech, and it's called a Pinot, and it's a tandem where the seat in the front is a recumbent and the seat in the back is an upright. And so you
I saw one of those the other day.
You would have seen it, and I'll tell you where, or possibly where.
Yeah.
This was the mayor's ride that we had in 2024, which just happened back in
June.
And I was usually the pilot, or Alan Boshaw was the pilot of this specific tandem bike. But for the first time ever, Jackie piloted it with
a city council member,
and that city council member is
Yolanda.
Oh, cool. Yes. Cool. Excellent.
So if you think it's challenging to get somebody else to ride on a tandem with you, think about getting somebody else who is vision impaired that's not sitting on the back of the tandem. They're sitting on the front of the tandem.
She had to trust you, huh?
They're basically the front bumper.
So is it a Pinot Grigio or a Pinot Noir?
Right? Both, actually. It's a double. yeah, it's super fun. I'd say, like, if, you know, again, riding tandem, there's like a communication element. And so we had such a good time. And I think hopefully when I get to do it with Cody, we also don't have any accidents or wreck. Yolanda and I had no issues riding together, so that was super fun. So I'd say tandem bikes are the way to go.
As we said in the Air Force, when I was in the Air Force, you're checked out on the Pinot.
Yeah.
Now, you're still pretty young, remarkably. I don't know how you do it, so you must probably be a mountain biker too, I bet.
Well, you know, actually, mountain biking is on my list of activities of, like, things to learn. So most recently, I'd say about 3 weeks ago, I just got my first hardtail track, which means I can do some more gravel riding on my two-wheel upright. And so that will be super exciting. I spend a lot of time in Colorado Springs on the trails, but I haven't spent very much time in the mountains, so the Women's Mountain Bike Association is on my list of people to join.
I think it's safe to say that we might have to have a recurring segment called the Broken Record segment. And if we do, it's going to be bicycling, because we love bicycling and we want bicycling to be good and keep on getting better in the Springs, for sure.
You got to just put up with me. Bicycles are a theme in my life and always have been, and I hope always will be. But to balance things out beyond bicycles, Jackie, you are also involved with UPA Downa.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
UPA
cool.
Downa is an organization that does many different activities. So why don't you tell us a little bit about some of the activities and maybe your favorite?
Yeah, so I would say, first, UPA Downa, for those of you that don't know, it's a nonprofit here in Colorado Springs. It was started through individuals that were looking to do something very similar, which was hike up a mountain and then down beer. And so now it's more friendly. So not all of the programs are related to that, but it's a sense of community and connection. And a lot of it is for new people coming into the city that don't really have anyone to connect with or know how to connect to the outdoor spaces. So it removes a lot of the barriers. A lot of times we know that there's a cost component involved in every activity that we do. And here in Colorado, we get to do a lot of them. So if you start adding those up, sometimes that's a financial burden for people, and so they may never get to experience an activity. And so UPA Downa opens up the opportunity for them to try a variety of outdoor activities, and that could be anywhere from some of, like, the, I would say, most popular ones right now in the summer is their pedal party. So they meet at different breweries around the city and they bike on the trail systems. And there's also a really fun one called Sup Pedal. paddle boarding, which they meet at Quail Lake, which is just a local lake here. And they just do the basics and people get to hop on paddle boards for an hour. But there's also ones where they do hiking. They connect with youth. And so there's a lot of like little hiker groups that go out, bringing the little ones to nature. And then some ones that you can connect that are a little bit more unique. So ice climbing is something that they do in the winter, which is a really unique activity that sometimes wouldn't be accessed otherwise. So I would say, you know, the connection there is really making sure that these programs, if they can reach everybody and they have, and anyone can access them, that they're accessible. And that means, you know, that we're aware that people could come in with all abilities and all needs and that we are ready for that. So, yeah.
Jack Quinn's, I think, started much of the meetup type stuff with their running club.
Oh, yeah, on Tuesdays.
And Up and Down isn't as old as Jack Quinn's running club, but it's before there was meetup online. Up and Down was a good way to connect in Colorado Springs and still is. So it's nice to have that. And Jackie does more because you're actually, or were at least, working for Up and Down as a media specialist. So.
So I got to wear a lot of hats, and I think as nonprofits and many people that work in nonprofits do that. But I think highlighting the programs that are out there, naturally I like to just highlight things that are happening in Colorado Springs, and that's something super fun. So making sure that that side of the world gets to see what they're doing is super fun. So we did a few, I'd say just highlighting them on social media, making sure people are connecting with them and engaging with them in that way is super fun too.
I left the room while you were explaining a lot about Up and Down. Actually, I was eating my slice of pizza here, so I might not have been paying them enough attention, but did you fully explain who Up and Down serves?
Yes, so it serves anyone in Colorado Springs, and that is anyone, all abilities and all levels.
So you don't have to be physically challenged anyway.
Yep,
you don't have to be poor. You don't have to be a kid. You can be anybody.
You can be any person that maybe wants to try rock climbing for the first time. And you sign up for one of the evening sessions from 6 to 8 on Fridays, and you get to go to City Rock with a group of other individuals, and there's guides there, and there's volunteers. And so it's kind of an introduction to activities for people that have not been able to experience them before.
Okay.
Yeah.
So Up and Down it was.
Help get people off the sofa.
Down a beer and get people off of a sofa. So the down a beer is...
not so much.
It's up to you. So.
And I didn't know that was what the downa was. I should have known. Crazy me. But so is it something, do you become a member of Up and Downa? No?
Nope, it's just a program. So you basically can sign up a few different ways, but mainly online. You would find one of their programs listed and you would just register online. And the fees are kind of, that's kind of the portion of it, is the donation based or really like low cost of each program. So it's usually about a $5 donation for a minimum, which if you go to other activities, sometimes they can be a little bit more costly.
Yeah.
And so being able to just pay what you can is kind of what they are about.
That's cool. Well, we're trying to celebrate the best, and it sounds like Up and Down is definitely worth celebrating and spotlighting.
Yeah, if you're looking to check out a new activity, I would say definitely give them a look because they've got a lot of fun programs.
So we'll put a link in the show notes, but what is the URL?
Oh, upanddowna.org.
That's simple.
An easy one.
And it is a nonprofit, so you could, if you like what they're doing, you could just send them some money.
Yeah, donate, sponsor.
Up and Down is a way to meet people, and I think you've met many people in this city. Your connection to Colorado Springs activities is broad, and after the amount of time you've been here, it's getting deep, too, so deep and broad. You build community in a lot of the things that you do, so give me a highlight of where and who, if you had your choice, you would spend the weekend with.
I would say anywhere outside, honestly. I love spending time outdoors. I'm kind of a sun up to sun down. If I could spend all hours of the day outside, I would. If I could do lots of activities every day, I would. So I would say some of my favorite evening activities are just things that are going on around town that are also typically low cost, or maybe even free. So there is a local bike ride that's happening. If you are on social media, you've definitely seen them. If you are not on social media, then you have seen them in the community as we have biked through areas, because I think a few weeks ago there were 69 riders on the Wednesday ride. So shout out to them for a free ride that you can show up and ride with. So that's one that I like to ride on because it's inclusive. So a lot of the times I bring a recumbent from Angle Tech and just cruise. So that's super fun. Obviously, the city of Colorado Springs has intramural sports, and so I would say I like to do a few of those. Did some kickball last night. Got a home run.
All right.
Shout out. So that's always fun. I would say for me, it might look different than a lot of people because I don't consider myself somebody that is elite. And so I think here in Colorado Springs, we are lucky because we are surrounded by Olympic and Paralympic governing bodies, NGBs, and there's, I think, 20 plus. Somebody tell me if I'm wrong.
Sounds right.
Yeah.
Yeah, there is a lot of governing bodies for sports, and that means there's a lot of athletes living here, and they are elite. And I don't consider myself someone that is elite, but I do consider myself somebody that does try to create community. And so I like to invite people to do activities that I'm also not great at, like pickleball. You know, obviously that is the hype. I think most recently I saw that the John Venezia tennis courts got replaced by pickleball courts.
Supply and demand. Pickleball is definitely the demand right now.
Did you know that there's a new sport that is a combination of pickleball and racquetball and squash?
What's it called? We'll have to get back to you.
It's a really weird name. But it's not something that you can just put up outdoor courts for. So it's going to be something where you'd have to belong to a club. Mm-hmm. And there's not a club in town, but there probably will be.
Okay.
One of these days. I heard all about it from one of the people that are working on it on a really great hike.
Oh, see? Connection in the outdoors.
And where did you hike?
We hiked the Daniels Pass Trail. That was my first time on Daniels Pass Trail, which was awesome.
That's nice. I don't know if I've ever...
It's pretty new. It's only been there a few years. One of the newer ones in North Cheyenne Canyon.
No, but
City
I have
Park.
To put it on my list.
And there's even an old settlement on one of the little spur trails off of that where you can go find these old buildings, you know, the old stone fireplaces and all that. And you think when you're walking up to them, wow, this is like, you know, miners' cottages or something, until you discover they had electricity in these cabins.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, Jackie, have you discovered any, like, of these hidden cabins? I know there's several that I've found, and discarded trains and mining equipment.
No, but tell me more. Where?
So if you haven't been on the trail beyond Bar Trail on Pikes Peak,
okay,
there is a tunnel, a 1,600-foot tunnel that goes into Pikes Peak. And outside of that is some of the equipment that they used to make the tunnel and some other heavy steel things, machinery, that's there. And it's worth seeing. But that's one. And then there's others. There's we were riding alongside the incline. So if you look at the incline, you're looking up the incline, there's a new trail. I think it's relatively new. There's a new trail on the right-hand side if you're looking up. So that would, I guess it's north. And there's his cabin, and it's just a spot. It's not very big, but there's some plants growing in it that people might recognize. But I noticed that. But I think that was part of the guy who built it, but I think that's been there for close to 100 years. So the places that people existed, it's pretty amazing in our community.
So when you have a friend or family from Kansas come to see you, what's the first thing you want to show them?
Oh, well, let's see here. The first thing I want to show them, or the first place they want to go?
No, let's go with, what do you want to show them?
You know...
We know where Maggie's farm is.
Right. Is that where they want to go?
Yes.
Right? You know, most of the time we feel like when people come to Colorado Springs, they want to go to the tourist spots, which is, you know, Garden of the Gods or down to Manitou. But I think if you can take some of the high roads up, like spending time a little bit in the canyon is usually where I like to go. So if you take Gold Camp Road up and just, you know, take that drive, I would likely say that is even a more scenic drive than if you were going to drive through Garden of the Gods. Not that I don't love Garden of the Gods, because I do. But, you know, to get off-road a little bit and to see Colorado Springs from up high. So that's kind of always my go-to spot in the evening, I would say, is to catch a sunset up there.
And it's a great place to dump a sofa.
That's right. That I won't need. I don't need those.
Or some
sofas.
Old tires. Not...
Hey, don't do that.
One of the things, there's a survey, I think the survey may have ended already, about electric bikes and the use of electric bikes in our community. You work at a shop that I think electric assist bicycles and tricycles is a thing. Do you have an opinion? Do you use it? Do you prefer it? Just give us a little background on electric bikes.
Well, there is a few different classes of electric bikes for a few different reasons. But, you know, the biggest reason is that they are machines, right? They're not just toys, they're machines, and they can do different things. And so we look at electric assist as a tool, as an adaptive tool to help somebody get where they need to go or ride where they're already riding. And so we look at it as kind of a beautiful thing, that it's there, but that you wouldn't really want to abuse it. And so looking at the higher class motors, I think you have to be careful, because we all know what a throttle is. And we all know how that changes your ability to pedal a bike.
Get your motor running.
Right.
Head out on the highway.
Yeah, exactly. They could definitely hit the highway with some of those. So, you know, I have a Bosch motor e-assist. Again, there's lots of certifications and there's lots of different ways to look at it. But Bosch motor is a UL certified, so it's safe. I like it, and it is an electric assist, meaning if I pedal, it will assist me. If I stop pedaling, I have no more assist. And so I love it. I love to use it in an urban style environment here in Colorado Springs. So I like to go to the market. I like to ride downtown and meet with my friends. I love it.
Is it fair to say that the electrical assist makes it so that you're taking that bicycle to a lot more places than you otherwise would have? You would have been in a car otherwise.
Oh, yeah. It definitely changes your view of where you want to go and what you want to do. 100%.
It's an extender for me. So I do things that I wouldn't do. I'll give you an example. I rode from the Buffalo Lodge, which is a pretty decent hub for all things bicycles, all the way up to the intersection of High Drive and Gold Camp Road, which I would not have done on an acoustic bike, a regular bike, a non-electric bike. But it was actually a fun ride, and with all the technology that's on the bike, that was over a mile of cumulative elevation gain. And it's cumulative because there isn't much downhill as you're going up. And then it's not much uphill as you're going down. It's a pretty distinct ride when you do a ride like that, where it's pretty much either all up or all down. But without the electric, at this point in my life, I wouldn't be able to do it. And it's an equalizer for me. And it makes the ride fun, as opposed to, that would have wiped me out if I actually tried to do it. and it would have taken a lot longer.
Well, 90 degree days have kind of shut me down on bicycling a lot of the time this summer.
Do you have an acoustic bike, a no motor?
Didn't know you called them acoustic bikes. That's
well,
cool.
If
I
you
like
guys
that.
Stop by Angletech, you learn a few fun things.
And they didn't make it up in Angletech. It's a thing.
Yeah. I'm just kidding. Yeah.
I just have an acoustic bike, and I know if I get an e-bike, then that 90 degrees isn't going to shut
well,
me
down.
Well,
there's a button on my bike, and I think it's on most of them. It eliminates wind. It eliminates hills. And if you're hot and sweaty, it can help with that. It's the mode changer that you can set it so that you're doing almost all of the work. And anybody that says they're doing all the work is lying, because why would you buy a bike that's really heavy when you don't want to pedal a bike that's much lighter? That's why you bought the electric bike in the first place. So nobody does that.
I think Will Rogers
downhill.
Said that, yeah.
So mine is called Eco Mode, which is a little bit of assist, but it's basically carrying the weight of the bike. So that when I ride, it feels almost like a bicycle without the motor, but it's pushing the extra weight. And that assist can be adjusted by the rider using high-tech smartphone, so you can adjust it, and that's Eco. And then there's another one called Trail, which is it's the happy day.
It's the happy day.
You can go wherever you want and do pretty much what you want.
And your legs are happy.
And the amount of effort you give it multiplies it. It gives you more, and you're just happy. And that's the happy mode for me most of the time. But there are times when Eco, I want to get sweaty and I want to get a workout.
Yeah,
And you can go from mode to mode. And the beauty is, at the end of your ride, it not only tells you where you went and how fast you went and how many calories you burned, it tells you how much work you did as opposed to the bike.
Oh, that's cool.
So it gives you a report card.
Okay.
And if exercise is your thing, it's not an unknown. That data is readily available at the end of each ride. So the more you give it, the more it will give you, or you can set it up where you do most or all of the work. And the ability to dial that in is just beautiful.
So the bicycle that we've been talking about that you have to be pedaling for it to assist you, is that basically a class one e-bike?
Yep, class one.
And you sort of brought up this subject because you brought up the survey.
The survey.
Do we want to circle back to that? Or?
We can circle back to it. Do you know anything more about it? I think it ended. They're going to collect the data, and eventually they'll give us a report of what it said. I would like to make a comment about it, though, just because the people have spoken. Who has spoken is the people who took the survey. And I don't think policy should be driven by a survey. So the national standard, the federal standard, is a class one e-bike is a bicycle. As long as you have to pedal to get power, that's what it means. So there's no reason in my mind to deviate from what's already been done at the federal level. We don't have to get creative.
But the question, you haven't really stated the question. What's the question on the table? Where should we allow what type of e-bikes, and are there places we shouldn't allow
You're
them?
You're here, so let's hear your opinion.
Oh, goodness. Well, again, I think I see it from a unique perspective, because I think I do look at it from the adaptive component and the accessibility component. So where I would hope, right, that people here in Colorado Springs could still ride would be the trails and the open spaces that, you know, that are connected to the trail system, because I think sometimes that's what we are kind of running into right now, right, is that we do have protected open spaces that also can't be crossed over, and maybe I'm wrong. So maybe you guys can fill me in if you're looking at me. But I think being able to have that connectivity and be able to ride within our city would be quite important.
I think it's a perfect time to mention that the Colorado Springs Parks Department has a permit, basically, a sticker that goes on your bicycle that's basically a handicap sticker. It says that you can go where no electric bike should go with your vehicle. You're exempted from the rules.
Great.
I just thought it'd be interesting for anybody listening to know that if you have a legitimate reason that you need electric assist, there is already a way to use it, even though the law says you can't. There's a way around it, a permit.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but what really kind of started this whole community conversation and the need for the survey is that e-bike proponents want Class 1 e-bikes to be able to be ridden on any trail, but there's some question about whether trails that were acquired with
TOPS
money, there's something in that language that prohibits something, motorized something. In
correct.
There.
That's why using the federal standard, and some people would disagree with that, and local municipalities have the option to disagree with that or not. And I wasn't around for the initial TOPS, but I was on the board of the Trails and Open Space Coalition for the follow-up, the second TOPS bill. Mm-hmm. And I got to know from my time on the board, I believe, all of the people who created TOPS. And several are still around. And it took me a while to understand why they wanted things the way they were. And it's kind of like a wilderness designation. And a wilderness designation is nothing mechanized.
Okay.
So you can walk and you can ride a horse, which I have my own concerns about horses, but that's the definition for a wilderness area. And it gets to be a slippery slope as to who gets to ride and who doesn't. Some electric bicycles are just like motorcycles. There's no question about it. And they should be treated as motorcycles. But if you have to pedal your bicycle to get assistance, to me, that's not the problem. And from what I've experienced, and I've had an electric bike for 9 years now, I think I was an early adopter to this latest thing. I mean, electric bikes have been around for a long time, but 9 years is a long time for electric bikes currently. What I've noticed is I can't go as fast as people on an acoustic mountain bike on the trails because my bike is heavier. My bike, as Jackie mentioned earlier, she has a hardtail, is a hardtail. If you want to go fast on a trail, what you need is suspension, not just electric. It's the suspension that enables you to go fast. So we're focused on something. And the people who brought up the survey, I believe, are the people who like riding their acoustic, fully suspended bicycles as quickly as they can, which is actually quicker than me on my electric bike.
I was going to say, I remember before e-bikes were common, you know, as a hiker, having to jump out of the way of acoustic bicycles that were pretty much screaming down the trail.
And the people screaming down a trail, I'm telling you, it's much easier to go down a trail fast on a full suspension mountain bike than it is to go down a trail on a e-assist hardtail bike, which is made to enable you to ride, but it's not intended for fast downhill.
So bottom line, you're saying, I think, that if you're a citizen who likes to walk on the trails and you're afraid of it being dangerous to have e-bikes on the trail, it's really not the e-bike that's the danger. It's the speed that's the problem.
It's the suspension. I started mountain biking in the 80s, when mountain bikes became a thing, and they were fully rigid. To ride a mountain bike was a painful activity. There was no suspension at all. And then suspension came later. Well, I used to ride Palmer Park on a totally rigid mountain bike.
That explains why you needed the downer after the upper.
That's it. So I know I jump on a soapbox for that one, but I think we can take the survey, we can understand our community better. I have great respect for that in the process, but I don't think it changes anything. And it's good to hear other perspectives. So I appreciate Jackie's view of, because a lot of what AngleTech sells, as far as I know, is electric assist. And that's a big change because that wasn't the case. But now when people buy it, they're spending significant amounts of money to get something that they will actually ride because it enables them to be just like everybody else. And I think that's important. People want to be like everybody else.
Do we need a disclaimer that says you're not speaking for AngleTech on this episode, or are you speaking for AngleTech?
I think, well, I'll let Jackie answer it, but I think it's maybe a little bit of both. I didn't ask AngleTech for Jackie to come, and Jackie's not the owner of the store, so.
We want to make sure she doesn't get fired after this podcast.
Well, I don't think so, but I don't think she's saying anything negative. She has a right to her opinion.
No, I think, again, being at the shop, I have a unique perspective in that, again, it's the only recumbent shop, not only just in, you know, the Colorado Springs area, but one of the largest within the state and surrounding areas. And so we are supporting people in a different way than I think bike shops are for two wheels. Mm-hmm. And I think one of that is addressing the e-assist component. Just like throwing numbers out there, a weight of a recumbent bike could be somewhere between 40 to 60 pounds. And a regular motor, gosh, on average is like an extra 15 pounds. So when Al was saying earlier, when you turn off the motor, right, if someone turns off their e-assist, they're just carrying like 20 extra pounds.
Wow, yeah.
And so, you know, recumbents are heavier. So again, you know, you're not going to probably see me speeding by the two wheels, even if I have an e-assist motor, because the bike still weighs, you know, 60 pounds. But again, the e-assist motor provides something different in the way that we look at it for our customers than we would just to make our ride faster or to get there quicker. And there's an accessibility component in there that allows them to just be able to ride at the capacity that other people are riding at.
Speaking of capacity, have you run into any of the Olympians or Paralympians training in the area?
Well, have I been able to get them to stop and talk to me while they're training?
No, that wasn't a question.
No, but have I seen them training? Yeah. Keep your eyes out because, you know, August 28th, in case you guys were wondering, are the Paralympics. And so we live here in Colorado Springs. There's lots of riders here. So I do get to see a lot of hand cyclists that are here in downtown a lot of the times taking the road and cycling around. We haven't had any athletes recently stop in the shop, unfortunately. But if anybody wants to come, they can.
Kelly Casabir comes to mind, and she's a leg amputee.
Love her.
And I believe she works for the Paralympic organization.
Yeah, I think she works for the USOPC.
Okay, what is the USOPC?
The United States Olympic and Paralympic Committee.
Thank you.
And they are the governing body of the Olympics and Paralympic NGBs that we talked about earlier that are all over. So they oversee all of those things.
Okay.
So yeah, she does work there still, I think, and she lives here locally.
But you mentioned a survey, and there's another survey going on right now that I thought we might want to alert people to.
What's that?
It's the Colorado Springs Parking and Curb Management Plan survey.
Interesting you should bring that up, because one of the things that I did in my earlier life was to sit on the board for parking in Colorado Springs. And this is my 2 cents worth.
Parking was one of my favorite activities when I was in high school.
Yeah, it's a different kind of parking.
Oh, okay.
Metered parking, where you charge people for it, is not supposed to be a way to make money. It's intended to keep people from occupying a space in front of a store. The thought was that people like close-in parking. And we know that that's true because we have places like Shops at Briargate where you can actually go and watch people drive in the parking lot from store to store. You didn't do that in indoor malls because that's not how they work.
Yeah.
But that's why people like outdoor malls because they're so lazy that they will do that. So when you charge for parking in a downtown retail area, you drive away that business. And those people go and shop at other places. And if we want a vibrant downtown, parking should be really cheap or free for the first hour or 2 hours or maybe even a half an hour. And then it should be really expensive.
Because you want those spaces to turn
over. Exactly. So, and you need to enforce it by chalking tires and giving people tickets. But I would like to see free parking in front of the commercial, the retail establishments, so that people can park for a short period of time, do their business, and then move on so other people can do that. Even having lunch. The reason people go to Sugar's is because they have parking. And that hurts other places.
Wow.
And Sugar's is very close in to downtown.
Don't give away the parking spots in Colorado Springs that aren't metered yet.
Shh. Don't even mention.
Don't tell him.
Have to edit that out.
Edit that little comment out.
No, kidding, but he has some truth in this.
I just want to point out your interesting choice of phrase, do their business. You might want to come up with a different description. Because
to purchase the set services and products that they're looking for.
Because as you know, there are not enough places for the public to do their business.
That's a whole other story.
Another whole subject we'll talk about one day.
Oh, that's a different park segment for me to talk about too.
Yeah.
But we've abused parking, and I hope that we, with the survey, get back to what metered parking was intended to do. It should be just like the express lanes that have market pricing.
So we'll put a link in the show notes, but if you go take this survey, they kind of give you a map and you can see what comments have been made about various places on the map, about whether the parking situation is good or needs to be changed, or whether the bike lane situation is good or needs to be changed. You can see the comments people have made, but you can't see who made them. So it's interesting. There's an awful lot of comments. I would say the lion's share are the metered parking's too expensive.
I have a lot of other things that come to mind when I haven't been able to check out this survey yet. So when we get done with this, I definitely will. But one thing I would be interested to read about it is the understanding of maybe the accessible parking spaces that are downtown. How many of them are there?
Not enough.
How
not quite
much
enough.
Are they being used? And how much are they being used by appropriate consumers? Because I was recently able to do a project, and part of it was highlighting accessibility in Colorado Springs, specifically in the parks. And I went and observed a specific parking space in a park that is highly used, and they have a great accessible parking. But unfortunately, there was a lot of people in those spaces that were not needing them, right? And they didn't have a parking pass for accessibility.
Yeah.
And so they shouldn't have been in that parking lot. I got to observe that first on, which I was trying to highlight that park in that specific parking lot. And I couldn't highlight it because there were so many people in that parking lot that were pulling in there that didn't need that space, but just because they wanted to use it. So I would say part of that is that how much are they actually being regulated for proper use?
Yeah, we definitely need some enforcement. But we also, let's just encourage everybody, if you're listening to Loving the Springs,
choose good parking spaces.
Yeah,
and
we
share
can
them
be better
with your friends that need them.
Yeah.
Get your steps in, park further out. Don't pay.
That's right. Go visit Sugar's.
Now, I think it was interesting that your idea that the parking should be free, but just for a short period of time. Because I know I've heard you in the past talk about the fact that if the cheaper the parking is, we're kind of subsidizing people to sit on their butts and burn gas instead of get on their bicycle or ride the bus.
Well, one of the movements way back when was to occupy a parking space in a downtown area and actually bring in office equipment. Because that's the cheapest retail space or commercial space in a city, in an urban environment. Think about how much a 8-foot by 20-foot place. I mean, you could put your studio back when it was a quarter an hour, even if it's a dollar an hour, you're renting a studio space for $8 for a workday. That's a deal. And even at $2 an hour, it's $16. So that's where the little parklets became a thing. People would put down some AstroTurf, the fake grass, and they would put some chairs, and they would have their space downtown, right on Tejon or Main Street or wherever it was. But you could do it because you paid the rental fee. And people said, well, you're not parking. So you bring a small car or motorcycle, and you parked it there too, and then they couldn't do anything to you. It was to show how much the value of in a main street, a commercial area, really is.
Well, that reminds me, another subject in this survey is whether Tejon Street should be closed off and made pedestrian only.
Oh, yeah.
So that's
I'm
a good
all
subject.
About it. Yes.
That's something I think we'll return to that subject from time to time on Loving the Springs. You've got until the end of August to go to this link that I'll give you and check it out. Yeah.
I know there's a few other communities in Colorado, like up in the Denver area, that have taken on some ideas around shared space in the downtown area. I know Boulder did it for a period of time during COVID, and I think they opened up some of it again. But the city of Arvada, if you guys check out that one, that could be a good idea to check out what you would want the downtown area to look like, because they closed down their space and they turned it into like now a vibrant community. So they do markets there on the weekends. Mm-hmm. Old Town Arvada.
Mm-hmm. Huh. It's got the water tower.
Yeah. So a cool thing to check out.
Well, it's a pretty darn controversial idea, the whole cars on Tejon idea.
But that doesn't make it wrong. Yeah. It's controversial, so...
It's an open opportunity to talk about connecting in the space that we love so much, which is downtown.
If you want a beautiful pedestrian plaza and that just great feeling of civic engagement, you just have to buy a plane ticket and go to Europe. You can't have it in Colorado Springs.
If you take a look at the tourist pictures of Europe, the one thing that stands out, and it's very subtle, you don't notice it, is there's very few, if any, cars in the pictures, which is what makes it walkable, which is exactly what Jackie was talking about in Arvada, which made me think of, as far as accessible spaces, there's a brand new access. It's not new. The access isn't new, but the pavement is new. On 4th Street in Pueblo. So this is, they have a new river park with man-made waves and water features. And this is the access to that park. But they have the best spaces. By far, the best spaces are dedicated to persons with handicaps and the appropriate permit. But it's close in. It's easy to access. And now everybody, it's an accessible, I would call it an extreme outdoor adventure park. That's free. It's a municipal park. So if you want to see something that's actually working and accessible, that's a really good... And it's the access to the Arkansas River Water Park in Pueblo.
Had no idea. Cool.
So close. That's
cool. Not that I don't love the springs, but when I see a good idea...
We got to bring it to the springs.
Yeah, that's why Jackie's
Pueblo
here.
Shows us up sometimes. I want to share a few upcoming events for people to make it that much more fun to love the springs. But is there anything else before we do that?
No, I think we got to keep this within reasonable range or people won't listen to it.
So coming up, September 7th, Mountain of the Sun Music Festival at Aspen Valley Ranch up the pass from 11 to 7. We'll put a link in the show notes, but that's easy enough to Google. Al, this is probably on your radar screen. September 8th, Patty Jewett Neighborhood Porch Fest.
Woo-hoo. Porch Fest is a blast. I went last year and dealt with all the weather, but it is a blast. Yes, I like that.
And I guess I'm under the impression...
Ride your bike.
Yes, do not drive. But I'm under the impression that the neighborhood's welcoming people. I think for a while they were trying to discourage everybody from all the other neighborhoods from coming in. But we'll talk more about that kind of event, because we definitely want to talk about the 1,000 Neighborhoods project that's going on in town. So that'll be a subject of a...
I think with Nancy Hengem, we'll be able to do that.
That would be great. So anyway, September 8th, Patty Jewett Neighborhood Porch Fest, 1 to 5 on Corona Street.
You can ride your bike there, and they usually have bike racks at all of the stops. Mm-hmm. So
you would know.
Drop your car off and ride for the day with your friends.
You got any additions to the list for us, Jackie?
There is an outdoor accessibility day happening at the Fox Run Regional Park. That's September 7th from 10 to 2. And that, I think, is with, you know, a combination of the Bear Creek and Fountain Creek Nature Centers. They're going to have a lot of different outdoor accessibility equipment, things that you can demo. AngleTech won't be there, but you can come visit us anyways. We'll have some flyers. But that's going to be a fun accessibility day out there at Fox Run.
Cool. Well, follow this podcast because it can only get better.
We got to start someplace. I'm liking it.
If you think this episode sucked, just wait. I don't think it did.
I don't think it was bad at all.
It was good.
I think Jackie started it off with a bang.
Yes, thank you. So I do want to mention that we're coming to you from the Studio 809 Community Podcast Studio, lovely as it is, at The Next Us, a professional cooperative environment for small businesses in downtown Colorado Springs. And Jackie Mueller.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for having me. This has been fun. Hopefully, if everyone's listening, they learned a few things that they didn't know about Colorado Springs on some things to do here.
Yeah, we'll put in a plug. Go visit AngleTech. Sounds like an interesting place.
It certainly is, and I'd like to have you back.
Yes, I'll be back soon. We can talk more things Colorado Springs.
Al Brody, thanks for your partnership on this thing.
We're a pair, let me tell you, we're a pair.
Until next time, just celebrate the best and elevate the rest.
Woohoo!
In the Pikes Peak region, there's no shortage of activities. Whether you're experiencing breathtaking parks or magnificent works of art, if you're getting fashionable at a film festival, or fresh at a farmer's market, if you want to hear the sweet sounds of a symphony or the smooth shred of a Stratocaster, look no further than Peak Radar, your one-stop shop for all events in the Pikes Peak region, your free source for viewing and posting events. So no matter how you engage with our beautiful region, visit peakradar.com and get plugged into the peak.